A judge won't stop the United Continental pilot integration. That right seat may soon require 700 hours. And Elon Musk talks about the future. This is Arrow News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this Arrowcast. All you federal employees, happy fiscal new year. Here's what's up in aviation from Monday, October 3rd, 2011. A federal judge has denied a request by the Airline Pilots Association on behalf of United Airlines pilots to delay the finalization of the merger of United and Continental Airlines over integration of pilot training procedures. Reuters reports U.S. District Judge Sterling Johnson ruled Thursday that the argument that differences in training would endanger the public was too speculative to delay the issuance of a single operating certificate. The new training guidelines, in which United pilots will essentially be adopting Continental procedures, were scheduled to go into effect on Friday. Captain Wendy Morse, the chairman of the union's United Master Executive Council, says, quote, "We continue to contend that this training does not meet our safety standards and is unrealistic. We're sorry Judge Johnson did not find in our favor," unquote. The FAA is reportedly on the verge of proposing that the minimum number of hours required to be an airline first officer be increased to 700 hours. That's a lot higher than the current 250 hours, but less than half the 1,500 hours proposed by Congress. Looks like that bored, frustrated flight instructor that's been teaching you to fly at your local flight school may serve an even longer sentence now. Lucky you. The Wall Street Journal reports that the notice of proposed rulemaking could be published in the Federal Register before the end of this month. It comes just as the pool of qualified pilots is already shrinking due to retirements and a reduction in the hiring of former military pilots. The proposal for increased flight time for co-pilots is one of four safety initiatives which could be presented by the FAA yet this year, all stemming from the 2009 Colgan Air accident near Buffalo. SpaceX founder Elon Musk Thursday told the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., that his company foresees an orbital transportation system in which all components can be recovered and reused, including the booster and second stages. In a video posted by the company on YouTube, animation shows both the first and second stages arriving back at Cape Canaveral, not falling under parachutes into the ocean, but descending on engine power to a precise controlled landing. The crew module would return to Earth in much the same way. In his speech, Musk said it's a big challenge, but, quote, "In the last 12 months or so, I've come to the conclusion that it can be solved, and I think SpaceX is going to try to solve it," unquote. He did say that while the video shown was a fairly accurate representation of the system, it does not give away any proprietary company secrets. Musk points out that one of the company's Falcon 9 rockets costs about $50 to $60 million, but the fuel for each launch is only about $200,000, so reusability would be a big deal in bringing down the cost of space. SpaceX is scheduled to launch a Falcon 9 rocket with an unmanned Dragon 9 capsule to the International Space Station in January. Musk said problems with Russian Soyuz spacecraft have delayed his launch, which was originally scheduled next month. In order to assure that the correct personnel with the correct training can be on board the ISS when the Dragon spacecraft arrives there. The components of the Falcon 9 rocket are already designed to be reusable, following recovery from the ocean. But it's a start. Up next on ANN, the RC model industry will probably avoid more regulation. DOT wants to label model rocket engines as explosives. And is there anything in Alaska that runs without federal subsidies? You're listening to Arrow News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, October 3rd. I'm Paul Plack. In a rare and welcome bit of common sense, the chair of the House Transportation Committee, which oversees the FAA, says more regulations impacting hobbyists are not the answer to last week's story about RC models being prepared as drones for attacks on the Pentagon and the U.S. Capitol. Representative John Mica, a Florida Republican, told Forbes that better intelligence is the key to stopping such potential threats, not regulations on, quote, hobbyists and their toys, unquote. The idea that a model could carry enough explosives to do any real damage to the Pentagon has been ridiculed by explosives experts. But Massachusetts Governor Jerry Leone says law enforcement might, quote, want to be more vigilant, unquote, about the purchase of model airplanes. What? Maybe an FBI background check on people buying balsa wood would be a good idea, too. If only model rocket enthusiasts could rely on common sense. For the past 33 years, manufacturers of model rocket motors and their igniters have been allowed to ship their products to hobby stores as flammable solids. The industry says that in that time, there has not been a single incident of a motor causing a problem during shipment. Yet, for reasons not clear, the U.S. Department of Transportation is proposing now to reclassify them as explosives, which could have repercussions for hobby shops and school groups, among others. In a letter from Tower Hobbies, which was emailed to ANN, the company urges hobbyists of all stripes to assist in an effort to reverse the DOT decision. You can find details on how to get involved in the text version of this story, dated October 1st, at aero-news.net. Just as people were starting to forget about the bridge to nowhere, Alaska is back with the airport to no one. More specifically, the new Akutan Airport, a $64 million facility being built on a remote island in the Aleutian chain. It will have a 4,500-foot runway, suitable for planes carrying up to 40 passengers. But it's technically not on Akutan. It's on a nearby uninhabited island called Akun, across 6 miles of sometimes very stormy water. So the plan is to spend another $13 million on a hovercraft to take passengers between the airport and a fish processing plant on Akutan. And since nobody knows if the hovercraft can actually negotiate the strait, helicopters might have to be used instead for the shuttle work. The main need for all that people moving is the Trident Fish Processing Plant, which employs up to 1,000 seasonal workers in the summer. In season, it's the largest fish processing plant in North America. Some critics of the airport to no one wonder why the company is deserving of all this public sector investment. Up until now, Peninsula Airways has been shuttling workers to the island using old Grumman G-21 amphibians. But the goose is getting a little long in the tooth, and an updated model by Antilles Seaplanes, reintroduced in 2007, is still in development. Peninsula says its current fleet of gooses isn't long for this world, despite $700,000 a year in federal subsidies under the Essential Air Services Program. For those of us who live in the contiguous 48, it seems like an awful lot of federal money goes to Alaska. Whoever coined the phrase Seward's Folly may have been an auditor. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller says we gradually become different people as we age, which can affect our marriages and our relationship with aviation safety. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.